inner circle. Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel.
I'm going to reach out.
Have the races with Steve Bick.
Just waiting to hear back, and there he goes. Michael W. McCarthy is going to join us on the heels of Doug O'Neill. And we'll get Michael W. McCarthy, and always fun to check in. And I owed Michael a call because you've won a couple of stakes over the last few weeks. Michael, good morning.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Not at all. And, of course, the Santa Ana on Saturday. And also, what was the other one, Michael, that I – was it 2 weeks ago? I've been on the road, and so I kind of lost track.
Let's see. How about
– CC. CC.
The Azaria. Yeah. The Azaria at Oakmont.
Yeah. Yep. There we go. CC's win. And, in fact, let's start there because – you know, you got the Apple Blossom to follow up, and some thoughts about the veteran mare.
Yeah, that was kind of in the back of our minds the whole time, was maybe to try and go ahead and stretch her out again. And the Azari just seemed to make some sense after the spacing from the Santa Monica. I thought she ran very well in the Santa Monica, and her number held up. It was the first race back from the Breeders' Cup, and you always like to win, but I saw enough that day to kind of know that we would be in good shape heading to Oaklawn. And, you know, a little bit of a heart stopper there. She kind of made the lead so easily. She pulled herself up for a second. Thankfully, those horses were close enough to her where she was able to go ahead and gather up some momentum. And Victor's urging kind of got her there. And once she got her feet back underneath her again, she kind of started opening up underneath the wire. So a pretty good performance, you know, not without drama, but we'll take her back to Oaklawn most likely for the Apple Blossom and see what happens.
Talk about the whole decision-making process about even bringing her back.
At this stage of his life, Bo Hirsch had said that he'd rather have more fun than brood mares, and he's got a handful of mares already at Columbiana Farm in Kentucky, and she brings him a lot of joy and his family together and stuff like that. So he thought one more year, certainly if she was healthy enough, to go right on ahead and persevere with. So we obliged, and you know, she's a trainer's dream. I wish everybody, all of my colleagues, could have one like her once in their lifetime. Some of them have multiple a year, but she's certainly been a blessing for us.
Really nice. Well, CC and the next opportunity, the big grade one, the Apple Blossom. And she's been a pleasure, right? 99 wins in 18 tries, and $2 million in earnings.
Definitely has, yes.
I love it. All right, let's swing back around to Saturday and the Santa Ana win and Queen Goddess's performance.
She certainly seems to thrive on these added furlong races. I mean, I thought her race in the American Oaks, taking off the turf and run on the dirt, was very good. A filly that ran second to her that day was another filly of mine, Nisus, who's been retired and bred to Justify. But, you know, those are certainly not races that come along all the time, so you've got to kind of take advantage of them when you can. She's a grade one winner on the dirt, a grade three winner on the turf now. Anything that kind of has that 12 furlong, 10 to 12 furlong type of a thing, we kind of have her name on it here for the rest of the year. But a nice mare in her own right, for sure.
She was one that you sent to Oaklawn, and you know, you've kind of moved in different directions. I mean, talk about, you know, what you think is her ideal scenario for this one.
You know, she's obviously effective on both surfaces. The day at Oaklawn, she was stuck out in the middle of the racetrack, kind of hurried all the way around there, and never got a chance to tuck in, never got a chance to kind of get into a rhythm and chase the whole way around there, and was, you know, lackluster from the quarter pole to the wire. Just one of those things never shaped up for, drawn outside and what have you. But, you know, I don't have any hesitations about running her back on the dirt again. It's just, you know, like I said, it's finding something that's mile and a quarter and then some, you know, seems to be her whole card. So finding those races, whichever surface they're on, isn't easy.
Well, and this is a nice pick me up, certainly, after Eclipse had to deal with a real sadness and a real tragedy. So I was happy on that front for everybody to get a
another state win. That was great. Never want to hear about anything like that. But it's a funny game. You know, they're incredible creatures, and sometimes just strange things happen.
Now, this is yet another. You know, it is amazing, and I talked to Aaron about it as well. You know, not that there aren't successes with males, but the Philly side of the Eclipse roster just seems to, you know, continually thrive.
Yeah, you know, Aaron's been very good about being able to kind of spot talent early on, whether they're private purchases or yearling purchases or 2-year-old sale purchases. I mean, he's obviously done quite well for himself finding these mares, and maybe they don't have top pedigrees or what have you, but they've become top race mares. And certainly it's shown, you know, in the sales ring when they go on, you know, to start their second careers as brood mares and stuff like that. I'm sure he's turned plenty of healthy profits for investors that way.
Well, and, you know, the performance in the off-the-turf American Oaks, which held up in terms of the grading, now, you know, she's become a multiple graded stake winner. And talk about Victor's involvement here, too, because, you know, his first time aboard, and they got along well.
Yeah, Juan Hernandez had rode her in the American Oaks, and for one reason or another, it seemed awfully difficult to get Juan back on her. And, you know, he and his agent had chose to go different ways a time or two, and don't know how it's fared for him, but it seems like it's fared fine for us. And I thought Victor's ride the other day was basically, you know, textbook. That's kind of what we had spoke about in the paddock. I actually thought we would be on the lead or thereabouts. And one filly went ahead and opened up by about 5 or 6 lengths and carved out some serious fractions. And we were able to go ahead and sit a handful of lengths behind her and put some daylight between us and the grouping directly behind us. But Victor had worked her the week before and loved what he felt. I told him that I thought she had the ability to kind of just get into one gear and keep that gear for whatever it was, a mile and a quarter. The other day, I didn't think it would be an issue. So yeah, that was great. Victor seems like he's had a little bit of a resurgence here the last few months between a Breeders' Cup victory and, you know, big stakes victories and some of the handicap races here. So it's good to see a guy like him, you know, riding at the top of his game.
Well, and of course, getting Flavian Pratt took a lot of the oxygen out of the room for an extended period, and now you know, with him heading out of town and Reese Bailey as well. You got veterans like Johnny and Victor, and I should mention over the weekend too. I think Sunday night they had the George Wolfe Award banquet and the presentation. So congratulations again to Joe Bravo, who's found himself kind of a home out there. He was on closing remarks for Carly Gaines. Nice. Well, Queen Goddess, then, Michael, what kind of a schedule and you know, what's the range? And you mentioned the added furlong, the mile and a quarter, but what do you feel comfortable distance wise playing around with her?
There's a race late in April for at Keeneland. We'll give some thought to that. And then I believe they've got the New York, I think it's the New York Belmont Week or the Long Island Belmont Week. I believe it's in New York, mile and a half.
Yep.
So those kind of races at a place like Keeneland, I think the purse is $400,000, and I think that race at Belmont might even be $750,000. So those are huge numbers. Those are kind of what you got to look toward, and hopefully everybody stays healthy and we come up with a game plan that gets us there.
Very nice. Well, this was a great win, and really at this time of year, it feels like this 4-year-old filly, she's going to shoulder herself toward the top of the class, and it's nice to get a new face in the division, and we'll track her from here. Michael, let's track a couple of horses as soon as this weekend. And I was going through the Arkansas Derby card, and in fact, Jay Pribman was with us, and we touched on a few things, including that Oaklawn Mile. Law Professor with a little bit of a tricky draw for Oaklawn Mile.
Yeah, Jay, I was real pleased about that draw. The horse has been effective at a mile. He'd get back to Oaklawn, probably going to find himself on a firmer, faster surface than what he had seen out here. I thought his last race here in the Kill Row was decent. I had sort of been lining him up to run in the Santa Anita Handicap. Connections had another horse that came out here. It was subsequently second in the Handicap. So we went ahead and split him up, but was anxious to get this horse back on the dirt again. And Oaklawn seems like a place we've done well at in the past. So we'll see. I'm going to leave that up to John Velasquez. He's in the Hall of Fame. I'm not, but he'll have to go ahead and work himself out a trip from out there.
Well, that's a very good test, and at the very least, it's a good test for him at right now at this point in the season.
Yeah, it's $400,000. It's I believe this is the first year it's graded. We were beaten in Nostril in it last year with a horse named Rushy. So
right,
proves to be a pretty good test on paper. So we'll see. We'll lead him over there with some confidence and find out how we go.
Well, and you've also, I'll mention it for Sunday as well, because, of course, they drew the whole weekend. Warbird in that Temperance Hill on Sunday.
Yeah, another race, mile and a half. Sounds like they were having a hard time drawing up, sufficient entries. And he's a horse that definitely stays and wants to run that far. He's had a couple of unlucky trips, spent the winter, at Turfway Park. It was just lipped out last time, and he'll be running late. That's what he does, and hopefully he can kind of get over the hump here and string a few wins together. But another one that's at that niche distance of a mile and a quarter to a mile and a half.
Let me also touch on a couple of horses that still have got plenty of upside, and that includes what was a bit of a Santa Anita Handicap wise guy horse in YY Paul Y. What did you learn?
We'd only had the horse for a couple of weeks,
right.
Came out here, and seemed like a horse who was, distance would be no issue with. Kind of was hoping that we would have gotten ourselves a little bit closer and a little bit more involved in the pace scenario here in the Santa Anita Handicap, and that didn't really happen. Horse ran a decent fourth that day. He's got possibly something like the Pimlico Special or maybe something out here that before that, but nice horse and improving horse. Obviously, these guys claimed him, and horse has gone nothing but up the ladder since they have, and he acts like he's got another big race in him here somewhere.
How about that Awfully Naughty, that ran an okay fourth?
Yeah, he actually is on his way back to Kentucky. He will be running at Keeneland, last week of Keeneland, last week of the meet there, I believe, on the 24th, and a two other band going a mile in 316. So looking forward to getting him back there. Kind of difficult to find a race that suited him, another one that needs added furlongs, and two other vans were only going here at a mile. It seems like we've got a lot of 6-furlong races on the turf, a lot of mile races on the turf, and that's about it. So obviously sending him back to the Midwest, plenty of options back there, plenty of different racetracks at different distances. So nice horse. I tell you what, I wish I had a barn full of $4,000 two-year-old purchases like him. I'd be in pretty good shape.
What, Michael, where did Nicest, where is Nicest going to turn up next?
She will not turn up anywhere. She'll turn up in the breeding shed in Ashford. She's going to be bred to Justify. So, yeah, as you know, the Yoshida family, they always are keen to buy the best that America has to offer. In this case, it was, you know, one of the best that Ireland had to offer. She herself being by American Pharaoh, Group One placed in France, and now Group One placed in America. So plenty of upside, plenty of pedigree there. And I think you saw what they're capable of doing. If you were paying attention to the races in Dubai this weekend, the Japanese were incredible.
Very much. Let me ask you about another Eclipse. This one, a colt, though, that Pennsylvania bred by Gormley, Crosby Beach, who broke the maiden, and then you quickly turned around and got a stakes placement in the Pasadena.
Yeah, muddled trip that day. Never kind of things never panned out the way we liked. Unfortunately, came out of it with wasn't 100% out of that race, and he's got some time off, and he'll be back in here probably about June 1st and looking for a fall campaign with him.
Huh. All right. I'm glad I asked. All right. Now something for you to kind of take some bows. I was at OBS and the March sale, and of course tomorrow we've got the Gulfstream sale for Fazig, kind of a boutique one-day event. Talk about, and you can glow all you want about City of Light and the reception that he's getting with these two-year-olds.
Yeah, it's obviously his, you know, for the last three breeding seasons now, he's gone up in price every year. That's something that's basically unheard of. He's got a lot of quality stock on the ground. You know, he himself was a very big horse and not super precocious. Didn't start till, you know, July of his three-year-old season. But I've seen a bunch of two-year-olds out there that look very fast, look very useful. He had one yesterday, I believe, go down there in 9-4 mm-hmm. for Kieran Dunn or somebody like that. I believe it was Kieran Dunn. Be exciting to see. You know, you never know till they hit the racetrack. He was very large. His offspring seemed to be going that way as well, a bit on the larger side. So we'll see. It's an exciting year. I mean, I've seen a lot of stallions that have, you know, a lot of nice young horses on the ground. First season sires that have a lot of nice young horses on the ground. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't bullish on the horse.
So. No, everybody seems to be. And, you know, Michael, we really should mention, and of course, you know, Ron Bauer is going to have to wait for his opportunity, and it was too bad that his, you know, he couldn't get the four-year-old season to, you know, to unfold for him. But you, in very short order, are sending a number of, you know, of males off to stallion careers, and it's still relatively early in your own, you know, in your own career.
Yeah, that's been nice. I mean, we've been fortunate enough, you know, a horse like Rushy is standing his first season in Florida, and he's got
Pleasant Acres,
60 mares. Ron Bauer, he'll go to stud next season. Timing was awful for an injury this year, and not easy to get a book assembled for a horse like him. You know, he's a Grade One placed at two, classic winner at three, and unfortunate not to be a Grade One winner at two. You know, if he's a Grade One winner at two and a classic winner at three, there's an awful lot of demand for him at stud, you know, no matter where he's at. But, you know, he himself was a little bit under the radar. He had a huge day in the Preakness. So it'll be exciting to see what he can do in the next chapter of his career. You know, it is nice to be able to send horses off to stud and, you know, reap the rewards of that. I think I was fortunate enough to spend quite a bit of time, you know, my 11 years and change of working for Todd Pletcher. You see a lot of horses come in and thrive and head off to second careers as stallions, and some of them, you know, I guess you could say in his own right, Todd Pletcher's a bit of a stallion maker. You know, I don't think we've seen too many like him here outside of Wayne Lucas in the United States that have had, you know, horses go on and be as success at stud as, you know, as successful at stud as they were on the racetrack. You know, Uncle Mo, More Than Ready, Constitution, the list just goes on and on. So it's nice to be able to kind of know that when you get a horse like that, what he's capable of, and if you, you know, are lucky enough to do so on the racetrack, that there's you know, still a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and moving on to a second career as a stallion.
Well, and we should include your other stallion, Independence Hall.
Yeah, Independence Hall, that's right. I mean, he obviously came to us with quite a reputation as a two-year-old, and lucky enough to, you know, show up on a couple of big days with him, and the win at Keeneland kind of sealed his fate, and he secured a spot in the stallion roster at Windstar. And, you know, Independence Hall, City of Light, Ron Bauer, Rushy. Yeah, it's been a good, you know, 3 or 4 years of being able to send those horses to stud. I'm sure there'll be a few more in our future here. It's just a matter of getting the horses behind the webbings, you know?
Exactly. Well, in some cases, you know, you're making them happen, and that's a big part of, you know, of the work. And it's a big motivation for the owner side. You've done it for these fillies, the mares off to the broodmare bands, and really, with a Michael, you know, you do not have, you know, an expansive roster either. I mean, you are basically liking to maintain a finite group of horses that you can, you know, stay close to. I mean, you have opened strings, you know, out of town, but you don't strike me as somebody that's anticipating, you know, having 300 horses in training.
Yeah, it's a little bit, we get a little bit pigeonholed out here in California. It's hard to kind of get the numbers that you'd like. But I could probably be a little bit more of a salesman, or, you know, do a little bit better job at soliciting clientele and stuff like that. But I feel like our results speak for themselves, and, you know, we try to go out there and just, you know, do the best we can with each horse. And I'm sure our numbers will swell up a little bit this year. They always do. It's a quiet time of the year for us, but I think we're going to be just fine come this summer and into the fall and what have you.
Well, you've already in 5-6 years you've carved out real distinctions, classic winner and Breeders' Cup winners, and top stallions starting their stud careers. Michael, it's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to seeing you. I guess we won't see you till Kentucky.
I'll see you in Kentucky.
I appreciate it. Michael W. McCarthy, everybody, and a bunch of good results over the last few weeks. This Queen Goddess, this is a nice new face. You know, I mean, she did win the American Oaks, but, you know, off the turf, it doesn't define her. It feels like she's still defining herself. CC, she's already, you know, has got distinctions, as it were. Bottom of the hour here, and we're going to, speaking of City of Light and sales opportunity, and there may be as many City of Lights in this sale tomorrow as anything. A couple of them came out, actually. Two are out. That leaves four. There's four Into Mischiefs, three Justifies, couple of McLean's Musics. Yeah. Taprit, speaking of Eclipse. 1, 2, 3. Looks like there's three Taprits. Three Street Senses. Uncle, oh, you got some Uncle Mo outs. One, two, three, three Uncle Mo's. So, that speculation was correct. There's as many City of Lights as there is anything in the sale. Three Bolt Doros, too. In fact, let's do this. Why don't we talk to Boyd Browning about about the sale? And we'll get a preview because, hey, Boyd Browning is joining us. And, Boyd, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Beautiful day in South Florida.
Well, it certainly was the right place to have the next big opportunity for people buying two-year-olds in training. And just off the phone with Michael W. McCarthy, who's highly represented here with those City of Lights. Talk about yesterday's Breeze Show and how things look for tomorrow.
We had a great Breeze Show yesterday. The talent that was on display yesterday in the Under Attack Show was outstanding from start to finish. Horses looked really good going over the racetrack. Lots of quality, lots of diversity in the sire power and pedigrees. Good colts, good fillies. Couldn't have been any more pleased with how the Under Attack Show went yesterday. Racetrack was very good and very consistent from start to finish. So, we're ready. We're loaded and ready to go. Lots of activity. Literally, I'm in the barn area right now, and barn area is just jam packed with people looking at horses. So very encouraging.
Well, and this this has always been an upscale sale. It's always been kind of boutique-y. Talk about the evolution of the sale, Boyd, because I've heard some things about that this may the venue may change. I mean, talk a little bit about where things are with this and where you think it's heading.
Well, I don't know where there's been no mention from me or anybody at Fazy Tipton about the venue changing. I can promise you that.
All right.
I think it's a great place to sell horses. I think owners love coming here. Buyers love coming here. It's a spectacular setup with a a real dirt racetrack. I think it gives buyers the opportunity to separate horses. We've been in South Florida for probably 70 years now, from Hialeah to Calder to Palmettos and now here at Gulfstream. We love our surroundings at Gulfstream, and our entire focus between now and 6 o'clock tomorrow night is to have the best two-year-old sale that's ever been held in the United States and make sure that we reward the men and women who brought quality horses to the sale this year in the best way that we can. And I think I feel very good about that happening.
Certainly the whole sales marketplace has been really strong. I mean, this now, we've gone from sale to sale, whether it's bloodstock, whether it's the yearling market, it just feels, coming off the strength of a good sale up at Ocala for OBS, it just feels the demand for horses is really strong. And certainly the international flavor, Boyd, is part of this storyline.
No question. I mean, the market's been very vibrant throughout most of 2021. We'd expect those trends to continue in 2022. The one thing that is slightly different at the two-year-old sales is there's so many hoops they've got to jump through in terms of the time that they work, the videos, the vetting, and obviously still it's important at the end of the shank. So you're going to have a little higher, quote-unquote, miss rate on the two-year-olds, whether the horses are an RNA or a scratch, than you do at a yearling sale or at foal sales. But I mean, there's great demand, honestly, around the world for quality horses. It was very interesting again to see in Dubai, the success of the Japanese horses. They've been buying a lot of top mares for
not at all,
several years now, and we'll have buyers from around the world in attendance at the sale. And the ability to bid online also has increased the opportunities for international participants as well.
In terms of the catalog size, Boyd, what drives how select this catalog is?
Well, you try to work. You want to have a solid number of horses. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I wish we had a few more this year. We had some folks who have traditionally sold that made a business decision or a personal decision not to come to the sale this year. But our focus at this point in time is, we want to have quality horses. I think the buyers that shop at this sale, are looking for Saturday afternoon type horses. I mean, they're looking to win the highest caliber races. And we're trying to find the pedigrees and the physicals that they give them that opportunity. And, it was tough last year in some regards for the Pinnockers to buy the quality of horses they've been used to because the yearling sale wasn't, in fact, so strong. So, but we're thrilled with what we've got on the grounds. And as I said, there's a great group of people out here looking at horses right now. And I think we'll have some fun tomorrow.
2 o'clock, right? 2 o'clock we start tomorrow?
2 o'clock kickoff, yes, sir. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Every indication based on that, looking up and down at this catalog, and I touched on a few of the, of the multiples, Uncle Mo and Into Mischief. Then in terms of the new sires, having these three Bolt Doros going to be closely watched, Boyd, after what went on at Ocala.
Well, yeah, they sold very well in Ocala, and we also saw some spectacular works by the Bolts down here yesterday. I mean, the 20-2 work was the fastest that we've ever had for a quarter mile breeze. And it was by a Bolt Doro filly that Tom McCracklin's got. She went beautifully. We also had the fastest 8th mile work that we've ever had with an Uncle Mo Colt signed by Karen Downs, Wayward Tree Farms. But in addition, it's just, folks get a little bit too concentrated on the fastest work. I mean, there were a large number of high quality works that worked, 10 flat, 10-1, 10-2, maybe even 10-3, galloped out very strongly. What buyers are really looking for is not the horse that's going to go win 4.5 furlongs. Hmm. They're looking for a horse that's going to win a mile, mile and an eighth. And, the fastest work doesn't always translate into the most talented horse going a distance of ground. It's the way they move. It's the efficiency and so forth. So, at times, no pun intended, at times the time is overrated. It's how they do it and the method in which they do it is more important than the time. So time can be an indication of a level of talent, but none of these horses are ever going to run an eighth of a mile.
No, exactly. And so it's one of the things that, watching the way they go and, you fold in some of the development curve and some of the pedigrees and, there's, you look at some of these that might have been April and May foals. I mean, they're not even going to be fully two for another month or two. So, the buyers know how to evaluate that and how to plug that into their equation. And speaking of buyers, Boyd, what do you anticipate in terms of people being active that aren't on the grounds that are going to buy remotely? Because it's become such a, the pandemic only kind of reinforced the telephone and the internet buying method. The system to provide for the best real-time experience for prospective buyers. Talk about the anticipation on that side.
Well, you try to provide as much information as you can to possible bidders or buyers. You've got the videos of the under-tax shows. You've got walking videos that most of the consigners have provided, in many cases photos. I think at a 2-year-old sale, though, and probably at the yearling sales too, most of those participants, though, will have a representative or somebody that can give them a little information, a little feedback. It may not always be obvious, but there's probably, some boots on the ground that are doing some legwork behind the scenes for most of those buyers. And, I think that's the case that's taking place as we speak right now. And you can't ever predict, who's going to buy the horses, but I would think we'll have a reasonable level of activity on the internet bidding. And last year in particular, there were several expensive horses that, may not have been sold via the internet, but were received very, very, very meaningful bids and a large number of bids, throughout the day.
Let's also, before we wrap, lay out the sales schedule for later in the spring. And after this, we'll reconvene at Timonium.
We'll reconvene at Timonium on the Monday and Tuesday after the Preakness, the Bree Show the week before. But the Timonium sale will be May 23rd and 24th. Sale continues to to A, produce, you know, tremendous amount of quality race horses, and B, the improvement in the quality of horses that we've been presented at the sale continues to increase every year. And without question, this will be the best catalog we've ever had at Timonium in May this year, because we basically have it like a 95% put to bed right now. And it's going to be the by far and away the best quality of horses that we've ever had at Timonium this year as well.
Well, and, you know, that's it's such a great resource for, you know, for those of us that are in the Northeast, a lot of regional breds, in addition to the, you know, to the Kentucky and Florida types, but New York breds will be well represented, Maryland, Pennsylvania, plus the certification programs, always a productive sale. And then after that, we'll be into the summer, and we can already start to think, I mean, you know, believe me, Boyd, up here right now, everybody, after a 15-degree morning near Saratoga, we're dreaming about July and August up here.
I understand that, hey, we start looking at yearlings in full force tomorrow, or not tomorrow, next week, as we begin the yearling sales season in terms of, you know, our advance work. But we'll do hot and heavy yearling inspection starting next week. So it's always fun. You know, can't wait to get back into the yearling business as well. We've, you know, in particular, Saratoga is such a special place to us and to the industry. And, you know, once again, we've got a fantastic group of graduates out there, from our yearling sales. And it's a fun time of the year. You know, obviously that's, you know, the Derby Trail and also a lot of fantastic older horses. So it's an exciting time of the year. Hope springs eternal, and hopefully you get above that 15 degrees soon, Steve, in Saratoga.
Boyd Browning, everybody, Fasig Tipton with the Gulfstream sale tomorrow. Inspections going on now after yesterday's Breeze Show, and then on to Timonium. Boyd, we'll see you in a few weeks in Kentucky. I appreciate the opportunity to advance the sale for tomorrow.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it, and hopefully on Thursday you're talking about a spectacular two-year-old sale results at the Gulfstream sale. That's what we're going to try to deliver.
Well, and it looks like everything's in place, including the buyer bench and the bloodstock itself, that looks poised for tomorrow. Thanks a lot, Boyd.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Boyd Browning. And there's a glance at tomorrow, and just going through the catalog. And actually, you know, we think of that Timonium sale as strong for the regionals, but there's one Maryland bred, there's a Minnesota bred. There's a Minnesota bred in here. McLean's Music Philly out of AJ's Honey, who's actually been a very productive mare. Nine foals, six winners. Some Canterbury black type on display out of this AJ's Honey. She was an Indian Charlie mare. But you've got 2, 4, 6, 8 New York breds, 5 Pennsylvania breds, a Louisiana bred, 3 Cal breds. There's, you know, obviously the Kentucky breds dominate. There is a very fancy colt in here that Tom McCrocklin has, Hip 16, a Justify. And let's take a look at, let's see what, I've got this ranked by stallion. So let me see here. Let's reset it by hip number, Hip 16. This is a Justify that went 21-4. Bred in Britain. And out of a Giant's Causeway mare. Oh, this is a nice family. Wow. Rebridled Dreams is the second dam, who, of course, got Carpe Diem. As well as JB's Thunder and Pharrell and others. Yeah, this is a nice family. And she herself was a nice runner, rebridled dreams. The dam was unraced. I'm wonderful. And this is her first foal. This is Carpe Diem's sister, obviously, being out of rebridled dreams. So this is a stallion's pedigree, certainly. Let's see what this, what did this horse, what did I say, 21? Yeah, 21 and 4. Those Bolt Doros hip 44, 48, and 60. Two colts and a filly on that front. And it will not be surprising to see activity, you know, strong activity around those. Let's see. The 20 and 2, this was McCrocklin. Hip 48 out of Rich Love. See what Sid tomorrow has noted. Rich Love, a Not for Love mare. She's got three winners out of her four, including two that have surpassed six figures. That's one of the things, you know, when you go through the catalog, when you start looking, and I should mention the OBS catalogs arrived, I think on Friday, and you know, two volumes for April, and you know, when you go through, there's a few things I mean personally, because we're interested in New York breds, I can give you a little bit of the process. The first thing you do is put your finger behind the index for state breds, and you know, start to go through the New Yorks. So you start to do that, and kind of leaning toward fillies, and because I should mention the situation, you know, with Carlisle Bell having a colt, and we already have the colt from Voltarine, who's now a yearling, the Motown. So colts are kind of piling up here. we would like to restock the shelf with fillies. So, you know, looking at fillies predominantly. So you look at the catalog page and you start to go through them. So the first thing that I look at is the produce of, you know, of the dam. And, you know, one way, especially if you're, you know, especially if you've got a limited budget, if you are, you know, only buying, you know, one, two horses a season, you want to increase your odds. And I mean, there's different ways, of course, of, you know, juxtaposing what the potential value is. I mean, for me and for the way we've approached it, we'd like to get, you know, a baby that either a yearling or if you're buying 2-year-olds, where the dam has already proven that she gets runners. So, you know, no matter how fancy the pedigree might be, and there might be, you know, a stallion that, you know, that has already got a proven track record, but if you're looking at a dam that, you know, has had five foals and three have made the races and only one has won, you know, there's percentages that are working against you right away. And there's certainly operations that will trade off that, you know, for, you know, let's say an emerging stallion. But if you, you know, if you don't have the, you know, the deep pockets to afford, you know, taking a swing on somebody like with a page like that, well, then, you know, you press on. So you go through this and you dog ear the pages and you mark up the catalog and you highlight the things that you like, you know, but having a little black type on the page, you know, certainly you'd like to have it by the second dam. in there, you know. But for me, if you know, you want to see a dam that has got a track record, that's a producer, and that helps. Just, you know, just raises the odds for you of you know, getting a runner. You know, you want one that gets horses to the track too. You know, they don't all have to, you know, they don't all have to be. In fact, you know, if you've got a limited budget, you kind of are in a very narrow window where you want a mare that has been productive, but you don't necessarily want one that's too productive that is going to, you know, attract a ton of attention. And then there's the matter when you talk about the two-year-old in training sale, and we discussed this at Ocala, which was kind of funny. There was that Peace and Justice that worked fabulously, and you ended up selling for $150,000. So you think, all right, well, here's a, you know, here's kind of a under the radar stallion. So maybe I can, you know, maybe I can sneak one in here. But the filly worked too well. So she, you know, she attracted too much attention. You want one, you know, you want one that's got a good page, but not too good. You want one that worked well, but not too well. It is a high wire act, right? And then, you know, the thing about this is that it only takes, you know, only takes one other person out there in the buyer universe to offset your interest, you know, to make it hard on you, you know, for that Freud, the Freud that we looked at in March. It ended up with Jeff Engelhart, and you know, and I don't know if it was only, and it probably wasn't, because I dropped out in the mid 30s, and he ended up selling for 47, but you know, it only really takes one other person that sees what you see. So it you know, it's really not different than the claiming game either. You know, you're looking at, when it comes to claiming, you're looking at PPs. Everybody sees those PPs. Everybody might see the, you know, the second tier speed figures, you know, Thoroughgraph and Rag and Thorough Manager and the like. You know, what can you see, you know, what's there that, you know, somebody else missed? And, you know, it's funny because Gary, the other day, I caught him in the car going to Aqueduct. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I got to go over. He said, they've got a horse here in the, I think, the second race that we're going to take a, you know, one of his owners wanted a drop on. And, I said, what do you think? He says, eh. He goes, I don't know. He said, I'm not. He said, he was sort of ambivalent. But then I looked the horse up, and the horse looked, you know, for 16, might have been worth, you know, for 16, how wrong can you go, right? That's what you think. You know, you think to yourself, you know, what's the worst I'm going to lose here? 16,000. But it ended up being an 11-way shake. an 11-way shake. So I, because when I texted him back, I said, did you get that horse? Who I think won. I think won. Won or was second? I think won. And he said, 11-way shake. So there's very few secrets. I guess the only secrets are what we discussed with Doug O'Neill earlier, right? About there are some secrets at St. Louis Ray Downs and at Payson Park. You know, at some of those kinds of places. We'll talk tomorrow. I think Nicole Russo is going to join us tomorrow, and we'll get her thoughts about this group. I think as a follow up too, I didn't mean to take Boyd off guard there, but I thought I had heard when I was at OBS, I thought I heard some people saying, I thought I heard a rumor that, and maybe I misinterpreted what was inferred about the sale continuing on at Gulfstream. I will tell you that, I mean, this will sound ridiculous. I'm old enough, quote unquote, to have gone to the sale at Calder, which was great. I mean, that was a certain, there was a great atmosphere at Calder, and the setup was really, the setup's good at Gulfstream in the ring there with the walking ring, and you know, the buyers scattered around in the seats. When there was the one a couple of years ago when it was right at night, it started like at 4 and went into the early evening. That was, which was kind of nice, actually. The sun dipped down and wasn't as hot. But the one that I'm reminded of, coming up on the top of the hour break, Andy's going to join us. The one that I'm reminded of at Calder had been over there and the sale's going on. And in fact, JJ was there too, and Sam. And so we went back. That's when we were on 4 to 7. So we went back to the studio, which was on 17th Street Causeway. And, you know, probably must have left at, I don't know, 2:30, quarter of 3, and shows starting at 4. And I don't know when John called, but John Parada stayed at the sale. And John called the studio and broke in with the Green Monkey news. That was the craziest. John called in and said, "John, what's going on?" He's like, "I got to break in," and he said, "Saw something I don't think I've ever seen, and I know I haven't seen or will never see again." And it was the still dubious $16 million Green Monkey. that was a Calder that day. Pretty funny. All right, let's take the top of the hour just a minute away, and we'll come back. Andy Serling going to join us. Talk to Andy about the weekend and get his impressions. He and I were talking last night about Epicenter, and I know Andy's already given heavy look at Arkansas because, of course, it'll be on the Fox show on Saturday. In fact, the show goes late. They got a big card. I think the last post is 8:15 on Saturday night. So that's how the whole thing with the Arkansas, with the Razorback basketball game, that's how that whole thing came up. All right, back after this. Hour 3 at the races continues here on SiriusXM.
Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse.